Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Our interview today is sponsored by a hidden gem in Starkville, Mississippi, Alora Modern Wellness. Founded by healthcare veterans Rich and Lisa Lopez, Alora offers cutting-edge therapies like whole-body cryotherapy, infrared saunas, LED light treatments, and assisted stretching, all designed to relieve pain, reduce stress, and boost recovery. Whether you're an athlete, a busy professional, or simply seeking balance, Alora provides personalized care in a serene setting. Located at 821 C Highway 12 across from Kroger, it's your local destination for modern wellness. Discover more at aloramodernwellness.com. Tennessee, not on the Mississippi State schedule this year, but we are definitely going to get a look at the Vols because I think they're one of the more intriguing teams in the conference this year. Our friend Ben McKee joins us as he does all the time from GoVols 24/7. Before we get into Tennessee, though, congrats, man.
Thank you.
I saw your tweet from January. You're in remission now. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I appreciate you bringing that up and sending me well wishes. It was quite the fall. First half of football season was fun. I had 9 weeks of chemo, so end of August, early September, those first couple of weeks were fine. But as we got into late September and early October, right before Tony Vitello decided to bolt on us here in Knoxville, I finished chemo the week before Tony left. So I appreciate Tony timing that out well for me to leave as I come back to work. But I'm doing great. I feel great now. It's all about knocking out these scans every 3 to 4 months. And I'm blessed that my last couple have been clean. So I appreciate the well wishes and you recognizing that.
That's awesome, man. Really happy to hear that. Look, I'm a Giants fan. If y'all want Vitello back, I'll sign the papers.
I don't think Tony Vitello is your issue. I think the roster construction is y'all's biggest issue. I like Buster Posey, but they got to start spending some money and getting some free agents over there.
You're not wrong. All right, let's talk some football. Tennessee, one of the few schools in the conference right where you're saying there's a real live quarterback battle happening there. You know, you don't know if you said right now who's going to be the guy. You might have a good idea, but you don't know for sure. How good was that battle this spring, and who do you think has the edge right now?
I don't know that I would call it a good battle, but it was certainly back and forth. That is the best way to say it. George McIntyre went in to the spring as the leader. I don't know that he had a great lead or anything like that, but just because he was the returning guy, he had a year in the system under his belt. He naturally had a lead, and he had a tough spring. He did not play to the level that he needed to secure the job, really position himself well going into the fall. Now, fall practice is a long ways from now. There's obviously a lot of growth that he can have between now and then, but he allowed however big that margin was, because he was a year older, that he had on Faison Brandon, the five-star quarterback that came in this offseason, that's completely gone. It's neck and neck. And, I mean, if you did just ask me, but if asking me today, I would say that George is probably the starter in the opener. But my thought leaving spring is that it's just a matter of time before Faison's the starting quarterback. I don't know when it is. I think George can be a good college quarterback. I don't think he's ready this year. And Faison's going to be a true freshman as well. So there will be lumps and growing pains there also. But his talent is just undeniable. Mm-hmm. Physically, he's in a better place. So George is going to have his work cut out for him. I think it's pretty neck and neck going into fall practice now. And like I still would probably lean George in the slightest bit. But Faison, for a freshman who just got here in January, had a very impressive spring. And again, my thought leaving spring is that even if George wins the job, it's just a matter of time before I think Faison overtakes him.
Whoever gets this job has got a trio of skill guys that might be as good as anybody in the conference, and Deshaun Bishop, Braylon Staley, and Mike Matthews. For your money, is that the top? If you said I need a running back and two receivers as a unit, is that where we're going to go in the SEC?
Yeah. I haven't done as deep of a dive as I need to on the other teams around the league because I cover basketball and baseball as well. But that's where you start for sure. I mean, how many 1,000-yard running back with two guys that are capable of both totaling 1,000 receiving yards?
Mm-hmm. Not a lot.
Each in one season, there's not a lot of guys that you can go to. And obviously Tennessee and, like you said, whichever starting quarterback, they're going to have to lean on those guys tremendously. Of course, the offensive line is going to have to step up, but if the offensive line can just be serviceable, which I certainly expect that they'll be bottom line serviceable, if not much better than that, then this quarterback is certainly going to have a ton of weapons to work with. And my thought overall is that because you have the inexperience at quarterback, you don't really know what you're going to get from the quarterback position. It's going to have Tennessee's going to have to follow the same blueprint that it did 2 seasons ago when Nico was able to lead them to the playoffs. They won because of their ability to run the football and because their defense played lights out. Obviously, defense is a big question mark going into this upcoming season, but they're going to have to lean on DeShone Bishop quite a bit. He's going to have to lead the way, and the luxury that Faison or McIntyre will have with this group compared to Nico 2 years ago is the receiver room really struggled 2 years ago, and now you've got two of the best receivers, two of the top three, top five receivers in the league, and that will certainly be an added benefit on top of what you're able to do with running the football with DeShone Bishop. And Heupel's offense is always run the football well. That's a misnomer that, oh, it's an air attack, air raid. I think we talked about that
We
last
did.
offseason with Lebby and the similarities. Like there's all this talk about, oh, they're an air raid offense. No, they're not an air raid offense. Heupel loves to run the football, and his offense doesn't work if it's not running the football.
I think you said that. He said if you ever want to get on Heupel's good side, talk about what a great running offense that he runs there. So you mentioned defense. A lot of new faces there, including at the defensive coordinator. Jim Knowles, who we've seen at Penn State and Ohio State, has put together some elite defenses for those schools. Now he's at Tennessee. He's got a lot of talent to work with. What do you think about that group?
Yeah, it's one that we're all still trying to learn about because there's so much new on that side of the ball. I mean, they've completely overhauled that position. There's some familiar faces back, like Arian Carter's back at linebacker, Jeremiah Telander. The linebacker room, speaking of some of the best units in the SEC, that should be one of the better units in the SEC because of what you have in returning players. You're able to go out and add a transfer from Penn State and Amari Campbell, who is expected to be a real leader for them. And then you have a bunch of youngsters in that room that are very talented. Jaden Harmon, Edwin Spillman, Jaden Prelati, TJ White, who's from Mississippi. He's an incoming freshman. So that should be kind of where it starts for this Tennessee defense. And then there's questions along the defensive line. Where's the pass rush going to come from? You go out and you add Chaz Coleman, an edge rusher from Penn State, and his status is up in the air right now. I don't know how closely you've been paying attention to that, but he's kind of, those on the outside are trying to compare it to a Boo Carter, Nico Iaomaliava situation, and it's not that. He's going through some real mental health stuff that they're trying to work through, and wasn't really with the team or practicing throughout spring. And he is their most important transfer because of the position that he plays, because of his potential and his raw ability at that premium position. And so they've got to get that ironed out and establish a pass rush. And I would have liked to have seen them add another interior defensive lineman, or at least one of significance. They're going to be relying on a lot of young guys who they thought of highly coming out of high school, going into their, now they're going into their second or third year. A lot of those guys are going to step up, need to step up. So it's a completely new secondary outside of Ed Reese Farouk at safety. And you do have Ty Redmond coming back, who was very productive last year after Colton Hood got hurt, after after Jermaine McCoy and Ricky Gibson got hurt, and then Colton Hood and Ty Redmond filled in very nicely. So a couple of familiar faces, but a lot of new on that side of the ball. And right now for Jim Knowles in the spring, it was about identifying obviously who their best players are, but inserting a new system that has been viewed or pegged as one that's difficult for players to learn in the first year. So the hope is that by bringing in multiple transfers from Penn State, bringing in assistant coaches that are familiar with Jim Knowles on the defensive side, that speeds up that process. So, as much as the talent overhaul, as important as that was, how quickly these players learn Jim Knowles' sophisticated defense is going to be even more important to their success this season.
So the quarterback position is the easy answer to this question, so I won't let you use that one. But you look at spring position battles. What was the one that you had your eye on this spring?
It was probably along the offensive line, just because, as you know, in this league, you win and you lose in the trenches. Just go look at all the playoff teams that made noise in the playoffs. What separated Indiana, Miami, from schools who didn't get out of the first round. It was their ability to get after the quarterback, to stop the run game, to protect the quarterback, all those fun buzzwords,
Yeah.
buzz sayings in football. So there's talent, as I alluded to earlier, along the offensive line, but they're kind of shuffling some pieces around. You're moving David Sanders Jr. over to left tackle after Lance Hurd transfers to Kentucky. Because that was your traditional NFL free agency decision of, do we want to pay Lance Hurd, the former LSU transfer, this amount of money when we brought in five-star David Sanders Jr. and beat out Ohio State for him? Are we still going to stick him back on the right side when we brought him in to be a left tackle? So they moved on from Lance Hurd, and David Sanders will be over at left. But because you're moving him over to left tackle, you've had some competitions on the right side of the offensive line. Is Jesse Perry a right tackle or a right guard? He was one of your best five offensive linemen last season as a redshirt freshman. Now, as a redshirt sophomore, he's still one of your best five offensive linemen. But is he better at right guard or right tackle? They send out former LSU transfer Lance Hurd, like I just mentioned, but then they go get another LSU tackle transfer in Ori Williams, who's a mountain of a man.
Yeah.
So it seems like that wasn't your traditional position battle along the offensive line, but is more so like, okay, what pieces fit best where? And kind of the competition within that puzzle was something that I was really paying attention to in the spring, because we talked about the inexperience at quarterback and the skill position players and pieces that they have to utilize this year. None of that's going to matter if they don't protect the quarterback and open up lanes for Deshaun Bishop to run through. So my eyes were totally on the offensive line, and I think they'll be a good offensive line. They have been a good offensive line the last couple of years, but the difference between Hendon Hooker and Jalin Hyatt's breakout season, winning 11 games, going to the Orange Bowl, the offensive line was elite that year. With Nico, it was pretty close to elite. It was really, really good. Well, the Joe Milton year, or this past year, when 8 wins, average football team, the offensive line's been average. It's been all right. So I think just whether or not Glenn Ellerbe, the offensive line coach, can get that offensive line to be back to being one of the better units in the SEC will have a lot to say whether the inexperienced quarterbacks have success this season and the overall team success.
I don't know what you're talking about with Ori Williams. That's a little guy, 6'8", 350. No, not that big at all, is he?
No.
So, last question, and this is the question. Every question, every interview I've done with these, the last question is the same. Final game for the Tennessee Volunteers, of course, is the game with Vanderbilt. That was a bad loss for Tennessee a season ago. That's November the 28th. If I saw you on November 29th, I was like, hey, tell me about Tennessee's season. What are you telling me?
Oh, I'm telling you that it was probably a frustrating one. I think Josh Heupel is in a pickle because he's going into year six. When you go into year six, there's some pressure on you to win, obviously. Like, you should have an established program, and he does have an established program, but for whether it's the right way of thinking or the wrong way of thinking, like, the expectations of Tennessee football isn't just making the playoffs. I feel like SEC football fans and college football fans, because of the decade of irrelevancy that Tennessee went through, they don't realize the resources that Tennessee actually has and what they should be doing. And that is truly competing for national championships, not getting into the playoffs and getting their rear ends kicked by Ohio State. Obviously, that Ohio State team was an outlier, but like, this isn't a program that's content with just getting to the playoffs and that's good enough. Like, it's getting to the playoffs and making some noise. Like, it's not realistic to expect a national championship every year, but the expectation every year is to get into the playoffs and be competitive. And they haven't really done that yet. So there's a little pressure on Heupel in that regard, even though he's obviously done great things in Knoxville. And so it's weird. And I say he's in a pickle because you're in year six, and when you're at a program like Tennessee, and you don't have a great year, the temperature on your seat could potentially heat up. So I don't think he's on the hot seat going into the year, but depending on how the year plays out, I think he could. And I don't, it feels like they're a year away because you have the young talent at quarterback. Now, those skill position players most likely are gone to the next level next year, but you're kind of rebuilding your defense. You do have several highly ranked receivers behind the ones we talked about, and you've recruited really well, but it feels like they're a year away from being a true playoff contender and making some noise in the playoffs. where in year six, you really shouldn't have a bridge year, especially in today's day and age with the portal and NIL and stuff. Like, you should be pretty consistent year in and year out. But because of the quarterback position, having to rebuild the defense and not really knowing what to expect, I think it's a 7-8 win football team. And I think that's going to be frustrating on Rocky Top because of the expectations of the program and because of the resources that the program does have.
I lied. One more question. How different would your prediction be if Aguilar had won his appeal?
It would be, I mean, I think that's a game or two difference. I think that's the, I mean, right. I don't know what exactly my record would be as today. I think they're more 7-8 than 8 or 9 in terms of the win category. And I think Joey certainly gives them a chance to go win 10 games because, and it's like those toss-up games, like Georgia Tech early in the year. Like if Joey Aguilar's the quarterback, I absolutely expect Tennessee to beat Georgia Tech in Atlanta. But like with an inexperienced quarterback, week two, you're going on the road for the first time.
We
I could
talked.
see that not going in the way of Tennessee just because of the quarterback position. So I really like George McIntyre. I think he can be a good college quarterback. I don't think it's going to be at Tennessee because of what I think. Nothing to do with George, just what I think of Faison. And I think Faison's going to be the real deal. I really do. And I think he'll show why he's going to be the real deal, but he's still going to be a freshman. And I'm not expecting him to be like Deshaun Watson as a freshman or Trevor Lawrence or Tua, any of those type of guys. Like he can be really good, but not still be those guys who are generational. So because I'm not expecting him to be generational, like I think he's going to take some lumps and the team will take some lumps along with all the, like I'm not convinced the offensive line will be elite. I talked about the defensive turnover. Staff-wise, player-wise, there's just a lot of question marks, and I'm a cautious person. I like to go with what I know, and I don't know a lot about this Tennessee team. So without Joey, I think they're in that 7-8 win range. But with Joey, I think they would have been closer to that 9-10 range. So I think it's a big difference.
Yeah. Ben, always a pleasure to talk to you, man. Always great information. Ben McKee, Go Vols 24/7, our Tennessee guy here on Thunder and Lightning.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.